Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming there from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us Kelly O'Mara, who's an investigative reporter for Insight Magazine, and we're going to be talking about an article she wrote recently going into the SSRI, the serotonin inhibitors and serotonin inhibitor blockers, and, of course, their use not only in our children but in adults across America. Kelly, thank you so very much for being with us again today.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Stan. Thank you.
Well, why don't you just tell our little listeners what this whole controversy is? You know, certainly doctors have always looked for drugs that would help people who are depressed or, you know, are having emotional problems. Or So where does this whole question arise? What's this all really all about?
Well, it's a very big issue. I mean, it's not something that I think we could even cover here, you know, in this amount of time, but you know, what I do is I write about psychiatric diagnoses, and I write about the drugs that, you know, supposedly treat these diagnoses, make you feel better, okay? And I thought that this piece of news was very interesting from the standpoint that, you know, long has there been this conversation about that SSRIs are dangerous, people commit suicide, they commit homicide while taking them, and there, you know, there's just hundreds of reports of this. Okay, so when I saw this research, I thought, wow, this is really interesting. And the article that I wrote about was a doctor in Washington State who took 15 years of clinical trial data. Okay, when they try out a new drug, they have to do clinical trials, as you're well aware. And so this information is then given to the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, and they decide whether a drug will be approved or not approved. Anyway, so they took this clinical trial data, this doctor did, and he looked at it for a 15-year time span from 1985 to 2000. What he found and what was so astounding is that in the normal population, 11 people out of 100,000 will commit suicide. Okay? What he found was in these clinical trials, the number jumped to 68 times that number, meaning 718 per 100,000 commit suicide on SSRIs in the clinical trials data, which is a huge, huge increase.
Well, now, I understand that they had done some studies with Prozac where they had a placebo group, in other words, no medicine at all, just something that looked like the medicine, and then Prozac, and there wasn't an awful lot of difference between the Prozac and the non-Prozac group. In fact, certainly a significant number in both groups felt better, but the Prozac wasn't much better than the placebo. Have you ever heard about that study?
Yes, as a matter of fact, it's the same doctor who did that study. It's the same guy who did both of these studies. And what's interesting, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up because that information that he put out is really very interesting from the standpoint that if you take a sugar pill, like a placebo, you do just as well on it or better. Okay, that's basically what he came up with than the drug itself. Okay, but in this case, it's a little different because these drugs, these SSRIs, Prozac, Luvox, Zoloft, Celexa, Effexor, we could go on the list, okay? These drugs are supposed to make you not depressed. You understand? I mean, they're supposed to make you just, you know, better. And instead, in these clinical trial data, what we find is that more people committed suicide on them.
And really, that's rather frightening. And then the other thing is, of course, we've seen the effect of some of these medications, at least the Ritalin type of medication, that have had our kids almost go manic. And certainly, whether it's Luvox or Ritalin, an awful lot of the young people who have been involved in these shootings in the schools were on these types of drugs, weren't they?
Yes. In fact, I've written extensively about the school shootings and the connection to psychotropic drugs. I first got into it after I wrote about Columbine, right after Columbine. And as you know, Eric Harris, one of the shooters at Columbine, was on Luvox, which is an SSRI. What people have to understand is that these drugs clearly are marked on the back of the box, on the insert, in very small print, that 4% of the people who take these will commit or have mania or psychosis. Okay, so are we surprised when, kids who are on these things go off, or even adults, who go off and commit violent acts or behavior? To me, it's not surprising. I followed up the Columbine story with another story last year that 6 out of the last 10 school shooters were on these drugs, these psychotropic prescription drugs. And, it's hard to get that data because these are all minors, and minors' records are protected by law, okay? So it's very difficult to get the data, but, I seriously wonder what, the figure would be if I could get all the data to all the school shooters. It's very difficult, but as I said, 6 out of the last 10 were on one of these drugs.
But they always sort of play that aspect of it down. Just as they played down the aspect of the drugs that this poor lady who killed her 5 children, you remember when she, I think she drowned all 5 of them.
Yes.
And then of course they put her in prison for life.
That's a very sad story. It's very close to my heart because Andrea Yates is a very, very interesting story from the standpoint of the psychotropic drugs that she had been given. She was taking 4 SSRIs plus Haldol. I mean, frankly, I'm surprised she didn't drown the whole neighborhood. That's how drugged she was. And that was not brought out in her trial.
And that's really one of the great tragedies. I know Peter Bragan talked to me about it, but he was never asked to testify. And yet, if the truth had been brought out to the jury and she had had adequate defense, I really honestly believe she never, never, never would have been convicted. We're going to have to take a quick break here, and we just want to play something for you. And let's see.
Hello, this is health journalist Bill Sardi, and there's no better time to establish a biological response kit in your home. In an age when we hear about biological threats, more common are cases of E. coli in our food, cryptosporidium in our tap water, and staph germs, viruses, and molds in our air conditioning system. Why be a sitting duck and run to the doctor after you've got a problem? Why not take something to stay healthy, like Alamex, the all-new 100% pure allicin garlic extract? You won't find Alamex in stores, but you'll find it by calling 866-405-4000. Alamex is equivalent to 15 cloves of fresh crushed garlic. And guess what? It's odor-free. Call 866-405-4000.
Okay.
Hello, this is health journalist.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly we are helping Bill Sardi get his information out on Alamax. I've been taking it for some time. I think it's a great product. But let's get into some of the other items we carry here at Radio Liberty. One of them, of course, is the Miracle 2 soap products. Certainly, we can't make any medical claims for them. Many of the people who use them have told me really how much they've been helped with rashes or other things. There certainly is a soap, a moisturizing soap, a lotion, a gel, and of course there is also a neutralizer, which some people say seems to help them as far as their gastric reflux. I know my wife has taken that, and instead of being on these pills at $3 or $4 a day, why she takes a small amount of the neutralizer, and she's really off of some of the expensive medications. Now, will it help everybody? The FDA hasn't cleared it, but I will tell you that the neutralizer seems to help many, many of the people who use it. If you'd like to know more about Miracle 2 or order it, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Have you ever wondered about the boys we left behind in Vietnam, in Korea? Did you ever know that we left 25,000 American boys behind in Russia, in Siberia at the end of the Second World War? Have you ever wondered what really happened in Oklahoma City, what really happened with the TWA 800 that went down off the eastern coast about a year ago? Well, ladies and gentlemen, all of the subjects are well covered in a fascinating book by Craig Roberts entitled The Medusa File. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, order The Medusa File. Actually, Craig Roberts was a police officer working on the Oklahoma City bombing. Now, this book has been suppressed very effectively across America, and it's self-published, but I promise you that there's no other book I know that'll give you more contemporary history, frightening history that every American needs to know. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR now. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Kelly Amaris. He is an investigative reporter for Insight Magazine. And before I forget it, Kelly, is there a website someplace people can go?
Sure. It's at www.insightmag.com.
All right, fine. That's www.insightmag.com, and you can get Kelly's articles and a lot of other fascinating information. There are two magazines I read from cover to cover every week when they come, and Insight Magazine is certainly one of them. So I think they carry fascinating, fascinating material that you won't find elsewhere. So we're talking about the use of SSRIs, and these are selective serotonin reabsorption inhibitors. Is that what it stands for? I never can quite remember.
Yeah, it's selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors.
Reuptake inhibitors, okay. And so basically what you take these, you're supposed to get them, you inhibit the process that breaks them down so that...
The dopamine.
Right, so basically you get higher serotonin levels.
Right.
Now if you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question on this, our telephone number... is 1-888-24-LIBERTY out across America, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-1895. But one of the most frightening things to me is the fact that we are drugging millions and millions and millions of our young people, either with Ritalin or with these other psychotropic drugs. Do we have any idea how many children are actually on Ritalin today?
Yeah, well, you know, everybody has a different figure, okay? And it's interesting to me because I got my data from the DEA, and in fact, in an article that I wrote called New Research Indicts Ritalin, I say that the DEA, the number of prescriptions written for Ritalin since 1991, has increased by a factor of five. Now, in 1991, that figure was 2.2 million. So if it has increased by a factor of five, we're talking about 11 million prescriptions, and of that 11 million prescriptions, 9 million of those prescriptions are written for children. So I came up with 9 million based on the DEA figures.
But of course, that could be just a month's supply, and if they're going to take it all year, why, that wouldn't mean there'd be so many. And how many, when you get...
Nobody takes Ritalin for just a month.
Well, I mean, but, are there 30 or there are 100 in a prescription? I don't know.
You know, I mean, what they're talking about is the number of prescriptions written.
All right.
And Ritalin is not taken for a month.
Okay.
Unless, of course, whoever took it had a bad adverse reaction and their parents took them off of it very quickly. But again, this is based just on the number of prescriptions.
All right. Well, anyway, there are an awful lot of children who are on Ritalin, and it seems that the schools would rather put them on Ritalin than trying to deal with the problems.
Well, again, you know, this is the part of the controversy, and certainly something that I, when I write about drugs and the psychiatric diagnoses, they have to be written about hand in hand because they go hand in hand. Without that psychiatric diagnosis, you don't get the drug, okay? And the problem with the psychiatric diagnosis is that there's no science behind it. ADHD, ADD, they are completely subjective diagnoses. In other words, you sit in front of somebody, some doctor, and he asks you questions, and you answer the questions, meaning a child, and then that's how he decides if you have a mental illness. This is ridiculous. This is subjective. There is no science behind this diagnosis. So they are drugging children for something they don't even know exists.
All right, and certainly we know this is a very, very popular drug on college campuses today. In fact, an awful lot of the children have, or young people now, have learned how to answer these questions. And if you get the right answers when you go to the dispensary, why that you give the right answers, they give you the Ritalin, and then you get a high, or you sell the product. And but you know, this is the drug of choice on our colleges today. I mean, this is a terrible thing.
Well, again, you know, you're dealing with a Schedule II drug. Ritalin is a Schedule II drug, meaning it's extremely addictive. Okay, it's the most addictive. It's right up there with heroin, opium, morphine. I mean, people, and cocaine. Those are Schedule II drugs. And now Ritalin is a Schedule II drug, and it has been for decades. The World Health Organization had listed it as a Schedule II drug. The federal government listed it as a Schedule II drug. The Justice Department, the DEA, I mean, we go on and on and on. There's no guesswork here. This is an extremely addictive drug. And yet, parents seem very willing to give their children this very addictive drug at a very young age.
Well, you know, of course, it's great if you got narcolepsy and you're falling asleep all the time, and there may be a place for it. But what really bothers me is it seems to be that we are using this excessively in the United States. Do you have any idea? Are they drugging children throughout the rest of the world, or are they just drugging American children?
Well, it appears as though it's just American children, because right now the United States uses 90% of the world's Ritalin. So we apparently have this mental illness that other countries don't have.
And really, this is really so amazing. And where is the outcry from you know, the public? Where is the outcry from our families? Where is the outcry from physicians? Well, having been a physician, I will tell you, I mean, the way that things really work, you are so busy working from early morning to late tonight, and then, of course, you have this fellow who comes in from the drug company, and he usually has a nice smile and a nice handshake, and he wants to know all about your family and how the practice is going, and then he wants to tell you about this wonderful drug that they have, whatever it may be, and it's the best drug, and you've really got to start using it. And then he gives you all sorts of free samples of this, and mm-hmm. and that's how really drugs are marketed across America. And he'll always give you a couple of articles written by somebody who got paid a large sum of money to give a favorable report on the use of the medicine. And really, this is the great tragedy of today. And then, of course, since the drug companies finance our medical journals, they don't allow things to be put in there that are really detrimental. They pay doctors to do studies, and if you don't come up with the report that they want, why, you never get another grant. If you don't get grants, you can't do the research. If you don't get do the research and you're in a university, why, you lose your job. So this is the way the world really works. And, of course, the victims are the people, and specifically in this instance, the children.
Right. Well, and again, I mean, another important point about these clinical trials is that if you take these drugs and you flip out while you're in the clinical trial, that data is not included in the clinical trial results. You're not allowed to continue if you flip out. Okay,
I would think they would want to know that.
They don't include that data. You are kicked out of the clinical trial if you flip out on these drugs. So they're skewed from the get-go. Okay, that's what's even worse. And when in the case of the SSRIs, I mean, let's face it, you and I both know, and so does everyone else in the medical community, that when they do clinical trials and they say we're testing for depression, if you're suicidal, you're not allowed to participate in that clinical trial. So we have a 68 times increase in the suicide rate of these SSRIs for people who weren't suicidal
beforehand.
I mean, it's crazy.
Well, I don't know whether it's crazy or diabolical. Let's go to Fred. Hi, Fred. Is this Fred from Salinas?
Yes.
Okay, fine. And incidentally, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Fred, what do you want to ask?
Yes, I want to ask a question. Does she know anything about the clinical trials on, like, using Depakote for a migraine?
No, I'm sorry, I don't.
I really can't tell anything on that either.
And do you know the doctor's name that did those trials?
No, can't help you. Sorry.
I have not researched that.
Okay, and you have to, I'm not going to make a statement if I haven't looked into it. Okay, Fred?
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. And of course, you know, there's a sound basis for doing study on drugs. But when there's so much money involved, you know, especially many of these universities will come up with reports which the drug companies want. And that's the great tragedy. And it's very, very seldom that anybody's ever punished for putting out fraudulent, frankly fraudulent reports in return for amount of money given. Now, that doesn't mean that all of the research is bad. It just means that you never know which you can trust and which you can't trust.
Well, one thing is certain. No child has ever died from ADHD. They have died from taking Ritalin.
And of course, that's a fact.
They have never. No child has died from ADHD. Okay. Number one, it doesn't exist. I mean, the criteria that is used for this subjective diagnosis is raises his hand at a turn, talks at a turn, wiggles in his seat, doesn't complete homework assignments. I mean, this is ridiculous. And then if they meet six of these 18 ridiculous criteria, they're considered to have the mental illness ADHD.
Sounds to me like he's a normal, healthy boy.
Exactly.
And, of course, we find this so much more in boys than girls because there's a difference between boys and girls. So it's the boys that are getting this so much of the Ritalin, not so much the girls.
Right, it is. It's very much geared towards the boys. And surprisingly, it's geared towards white middle class because they have insurance, and insurance will cover it, okay? It's amazing to look at, you know, statistically what's going on.
And, of course, the pressure really is on from the schools, onto many doctors to, at least in many states, you know, to prescribe these drugs. Now, apparently, some states have passed laws saying that the schools can't pressure to have this administered. What's that about?
Right. Almost 24 states have actually passed legislation that says schools may not recommend ADHD and Ritalin. In other words, you know, your teacher can't write a note home and say, hey, I want you to go have your kid tested because we think he's got ADHD.
All right, we're going to be back in just a moment with Kelly O'Mara, and we'll welcome your calls here at Radio Liberty. And, of course, this is the time I want to mention for our listeners that we carry the Phonopoly. It's a Phonixopoly. It's a board game played like Monopoly, and it's not one board game. It's five board games and two bonus games. And if your child will play these games for 16 hours, they will begin to reorient their outlook. They'll begin to read phonetically, pronounce words phonetically, and spell phonetically, because phonics is the basis of the learning, the understanding of the English language. There are only 40 sounds. There are something like 12 rules, and when you learn those, why, you know more than most college graduates. So if you'd like to get a Phonopoly set, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. The ability to read is the best gift you can give to a child today. And then we also carry the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum, and I'll tell you more about that in just a moment here. And, of course, the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum is on 22 CDs. It has all the information you need to take your child from grammar school all the way through high school graduation. The only thing additional you have to buy is the Saxon Math textbooks. And, of course, you can get them at a 20% discount from Dr. Robinson's ministry. And let me point out, there are over 50,000 of these out across America. You'll get the complete British Encyclopedia Britannica, 1911 volume before they began to rewrite it and change history, a 1913 Noah Webster's Dictionary. If you'd like more information or like to get one, give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR right now. We have a brand new video today on the Oklahoma City bombing. It's called Oklahoma, What Really Happened. And of course, it consists of a lot of never-before-seen video footage. Now, it was seen in Oklahoma City immediately following the bombing of the Murrah Building, but blacked out across America. And in this footage, you're going to see the commentators talking about the other bombs that were in the building at the time of the initial bombing. We're told, of course, that Timothy McVeigh acted independently. We're told many things by the media, but wherein does the truth lie? Oklahoma City, what really happened, it will give you the opportunity to see long suppressed video footage of what really transpired. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for Oklahoma City, what really happened. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest today is Kelly O'Mara. And, of course, we're talking about the use of SSRIs, these psychotropic drugs, on children. And of course, there are a few people who are very, very concerned about this. Certainly, Dr. Peter Bragan has been concerned. And fortunately, a number of states now have passed legislation that really more or less forbid the schools from actually pushing this. And yet, this has been one of the big things of the educational establishment. Get our kids onto these drugs. Now, if you go back and you read Aldous Huxley, A Brave New World, and you know, we think these are just sort of foolish books, imaginary, and yet you'll find out that the whole idea was to get everybody on a pill so they would feel happy. In fact, the pill was called Soma, and I remember when I was practicing medicine, I was just a resident, this was back 1955, and the Soma pills had just come out. Well, of course, I think Ritalin is, and some of these other drugs are even more effective. You get people onto these medications, they get addicted to them, and of course, they just have this whole different view of the world. Could there be an intentional effort to drug our children? Well, can you think of another explanation we're doing this? Why don't you get it into the background of how this diagnosis is made? You say that there, you get 6 of the 18 questions you're asked, and suddenly you're at ADHD or ADD. And this really sounds terrible, but is there any evidence that these entities really exist?
No. You know, I'm so glad that you asked this, because this is the crux of the matter. I mean, this is where the rubber hits the road, and that is that there is no science. In other words, there's no documentable, confirmatory, diagnostical, physical abnormality. There's nothing in life or at autopsy that shows you ADHD. And for that matter, any other psychiatric diagnosis, such as depression, such as schizophrenia, you know, bipolar, a chemical imbalance, this is all not based in science. It is subjective, okay? There are the DSM-4, which is basically the billing bible for the American Psychiatric Association, lists 324 mental disorders. And of those, they intermingle neurological diseases like dementia or mental retardation or Rett's disorder. Those are real diseases, okay? Then, throughout the rest of the book, are all these psychiatric diagnoses that are not diseases. And yet, that's how they sell them, that this is a real brain disease. Well, in fact, nobody has ever been diagnosed at autopsy of dying from depression, because you can't find it. And that's the same thing with ADHD, conduct disorder, you know, all of the psychotic disorders. These are psychiatric diagnoses, and that's what people have to understand. They are taking drugs based on subjective diagnoses, not scientific diagnoses.
Well, you know, it's very interesting. Here in the state of California, a doctor, a very competent doctor, had a patient come in who was on Ritalin, and the parents were very unhappy that the child's whole mental outlook had changed, and so he took the child off of Ritalin, which, of course, had been advocated by the schools, and he put the child onto herbs and various nutritional things, and the child did great. They got off of the Ritalin, the child was doing fine, the parents were as happy as they could be, the child was as happy as they could be, but the school nurse wasn't happy, and they brought charges against that doctor, and they took away his medical license because he dared to take this child off of a drug that suppresses the pituitary, that these children are smaller, you know, that they don't grow normally. And here's a doctor who's trying to do the right thing and is punished for it. And sometimes, you know, I think we live in a world gone mad. Other times I'm certain of it.
Yeah, well, you know, the sad truth of that is that this is happening. Even parents are having their kids taken from them if they refuse to drug them. And I actually know some of these people personally who I've met through my reporting. It's just heartbreaking because they've said, you know, look, we're not going to drug this kid because we've seen what the drugs have done to him. It's bad for him. He's worse when he takes these. And, you know, social services come in, take the kid out of the house.
Well, of course, that's why I tell parents you're foolish to put your children into a government school. Homeschool them if there's any way you possibly can. And then, of course, there's not going to be the homes, child abuse people looking over your shoulder to abuse your child.
Well, it's my understanding that they'll even go into the home as far as homeschooling. I mean, I don't think anything's off limits anymore.
Well, I really think that what we need to do is, of course, change the law where the federal government actually subsidizes this. You don't get your federal funds. You don't get the $25,000 they offer for taking every child out of this home, unless, of course, they take the child out of the home. In fact, I talked to a Matt Throckmorton last night who's on the legislative committees there. He's a legislator in Utah, and he's trying to get the federal laws changed that actually reward the local child abuse protection agency with large sums of money if they take the child out of the home. Well, you know, you get what you subsidize. If you want to, to get children taken out of the homes and disrupt the parent-child relationship, why you do it by offering $25,000 in fees that can be given. And that's where most of these agencies get the majority of their funding, is from the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
Our tax money. And it is so heartbreaking to see these things going on. And see the average person totally unconcerned, until it is their child that's taken away.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that. I mean, I spent 17 years in Congress before I became a journalist. And I tell you, it always amazed me when big pieces of legislation were passed by the House. It was the day after the vote that 99.9% of the people called in and said, hey, you know, why did you vote for that? You know, in my mind, I'm thinking, where were you 3 months ago when they were debating this bill? You know what I mean? But so it was always after the fact, once they were directly affected, that they cared. You know what I mean?
Well, but the thing is, the average person doesn't know what's going on in Congress. We don't have access to the legislation. Well, you can get it off the Internet with great difficulty, but then some of these things are so long and tedious, you can't understand what they're talking about anyway, or they'll have a section that refers to something else which you don't have access to. You know how that works, and we refer to Section 34 of some other law, and how are you going to figure out what they're talking about?
Well, you know, look, I understand. Look, it's imperative at this point that everybody try and get smart about it because, look, you know, these are your children. That's all I can say is these are your children. If you want to spend the time to get smart, you have to do it. Somebody else can't do it for you.
Well, you can come on here and tell us what these things are so that we can get
well,
started.
I'll tell you, you know, right now there's some legislation in Congress that is bad legislation. It's the mental health parity bill, and that's a bill that basically is going to make mental illness equal with medical illnesses. And if that passes, you know, there are a lot of groups that believe it'll put insurance companies out of business, period.
Well, they want to destroy the private medical insurance so they can have socialized medicine. That's
well, that might be the whole... that might be what's behind it. But the fact is, people need to know that this legislation is up there, that it's got a really good chance of passing, unless people stand up and say, hey, wait, we want to see the science behind your mental illness. We want to see the science. I mean, let's look at it this way. The Surgeon General, and I have to give this quote, and I give this quote in every interview I do because I think it's such an important quote from the former Surgeon General, David Satcher. He wrote the 1999 Surgeon General's Report on Mental Health. And in that report, that 400-page report, here's what he says. He says, the diagnosis of mental disorders is often believed to be more difficult than diagnosing general medical disorders, since there is no definitive lesion, laboratory test, or abnormality in brain tissue that can identify the illness. The Surgeon General is telling you, we don't have any science to back up these mental illnesses. That's what he just said in those words. There's no science here.
Well, I think for our listeners, you have to know that if the federal government mandates that your private health insurance, covers mental illnesses, it will bankrupt the insurance companies because everybody who's depressed if it doesn't cost you anything to go to the doctor, you go to the doctor. When you're paying for it or paying for a large part of the bill yourself, at least you're going to think twice about going. And the psychiatrists just love this because they're going to come out like bandits, and they don't even have to wear a mask in the office. But let me tell you, this is the worst possible thing. When I was in the California Medical Association, we fought this year after year. The psychiatrists wanted, because they're not concerned, well, I hate to say this, but they're not really concerned about the patients. They want that mandated so they'll make a lot more money. And I saw this with pediatrics. I saw it with psychiatrists. Neither one who make a large sum of money. So here was a way to use government to subsidize their income. Because once you mandate this, then of course it has to be prescribed by law, and then everybody can come in, and it doesn't cost them anything.
I think that it's even a bigger picture than that, because when you say that mental illnesses are equal to medical diagnoses such as cancer. If you've got cancer, you can do blood work. There are tests that you can see this disease, okay? With psychiatric diagnosing, there is no test. There's no blood test. There's no x-ray. There's no PET scan. There's no MRI. There's nothing. It's subjective. So what happens? You go to a psychiatrist. You say, oh, I'm depressed. So he gives you Prozac. And then you come back 6 months later, and you're still depressed, or now you're bipolar. He'll diagnose you with bipolar, another one of those psychiatric diagnoses that's not based in science. I mean, they're endless. They can come up with all kinds of mental disorders. In fact, they just recently have come up with another one that they're looking to get into the new DSM, which is called relational disorder. That is, people in a group have the same mental disorder. I mean, that's ridiculous. But that's a new mental disorder that they've come up with.
Well, I know I see these ads on television. Do you feel nervous at times? Do you feel you don't like to be around people at times? Well, obviously you have, and I don't even know what they're talking about. You have this new medical illness, and we've got this wonderful pill for you. Ask your doctor if you should be taking pill number 3923. And a lot of people say, gee, I get nervous, I'm tired at nighttime, I'm sleepy in the mornings, and obviously I must have some sort of a mental illness. And, what they're doing is making all of us feel that there's something wrong with us.
Right. When in fact, I'm not a doctor. I'm an investigative reporter. And for 4 years, I have written about these diagnoses, and I've written about the pills that are supposed to make them better. What I can tell you is that this is a never-ending cycle. You're diagnosed with one thing, given this pill, diagnosed with another, switched to this pill. I mean, it's endless because there's no science to it. How can you possibly cure something that you don't even know exists?
Well, they're all subjective diagnoses, that's the thing. And there are people who are depressed, but, why are they depressed?
Are.
And the thing is that a lot of these people respond to nutritional therapy, certainly if you change their what they're eating, those people would like to get into this. We do have a wonderful video. It's called Turn on the Light, and by Dr. Dave. Let me recommend that, too. We're going to have to take a three-minute break. When we get back, we'll invite your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when, of course, we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we're really dependent on those of you who listen to our programs who believe there's a problem and believe you're going to hear things on our programs you're not going to hear from Rush Limbaugh or other establishment communicasters. And I love Rush. I think he's one of the smartest people I know, and as I would like to say, he's the best conservative money can buy. But we're going to discuss things that he will not discuss and that the others won't discuss. Because, of course, we're not dependent upon making big salaries. I do what I do because I want to educate the American people while I still have an opportunity. So if you believe there's a problem and you'd like to partner with us in our effort to educate the people about the spiritual forces behind what's going on, why give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Some people join the Radio Liberty family of supporters for a suggested gift of at least $20 a month. Others simply subscribe to the newsletters or get our products. If you'd like a free copy of our latest newsletter, which is the testimony of Kristen Breitweiser before the Senate Select Committee, a testimony which was not thoroughly covered by the majority of the media, give us a call. That's the October newsletter. The September newsletter explains to you why the September 11th attack. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And we'll be glad to send you a free copy of our newsletter. And we hope you'll tell other people about our programs. You'll help to tell them about our website, RadioLiberty.com. A book that will really help you to understand the nature of the spiritual battle in which we're currently involved is Gary Kaur's book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism. Now, you may remember Gary Kaur's book, A Root to Global Occupation. His second book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism, goes into the very real spiritual forces, the dark and sinister spiritual forces, which have energized those people who are molding the world in which we live today. Going to the background of Masonry theosophy, and he actually quotes extensively from the writings of these people who have helped to mold the events of the 20th century. The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaur will give you tremendous insight into the background of what's happening in America today. And unless you understand the spiritual forces at work, you really can't understand the unfolding of events. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaur. Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, our guest this afternoon is Kelly O'Mara, who's an investigative reporter for Insight magazine. And if you don't read Insight, why, shame on you. You really should. Well, right now we've got Richard calling all the way from Vermont. Hi, Richard. Do you have a question or comment?
Hi, Dr. Stan. Yes, certainly.
Could you speak up just a little louder?
Sure thing. My name is Richard. I'm calling from Vermont. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, you're doing fine.
Okay, thanks. Thank you, Dr. Stan. I was just listening to your program. I thought it was fascinating. I am currently working as a holistic practitioner. So I work with people practicing. I practice cranial sacral therapy and nutritional therapy. And I am a former substance abuse counselor. And I really get, after being in the field of substance abuse for about 11 years, I get very, very tired of trying to get through to the school systems because they certainly don't want to really hear what's going on in the community. And they really don't want to help the kids.
Okay, let me ask you something, Richard.
Sure.
If you worked in substance abuse, what was the frequency by which young people were started on Ritalin and then would graduate, to really more serious drugs like cocaine or hard drugs?
That's a great question. I know from my personal experience that I saw the research that was available, and this was perhaps 6 years ago because I used to work on an adolescent unit. We saw about 25 or 26% of the kids were doing inhalants, you know, huffing things that might be found in the kitchen or paint or things like that. I really don't have a good answer for what you're asking me. I know that an enormous amount of kids are doing street drugs and heroin and certainly drinking and smoking cigarettes, of course. Those are minor things compared to what the kids are doing out there. But certainly these are gateway drugs and they lead on to other things. And my suspicion is that the market is really looking at attempting to get these kids hooked on something early so that would lead to a lifelong usage of other drugs later on.
Let me just ask Kelly. Kelly, have you ever looked into that? Is the relationship between childhood use of Ritalin and harder drugs?
No, other than the fact that, as I say, the federal government is concerned enough to list Ritalin as a Schedule II drug, which means it's of the most addictive.
Okay. Did you have anything else you wanted to say, Richard?
One thing briefly, if I could. I have found that cranial sacral therapy, and if you look into it, there certainly are doctors out there practicing it, can help kids in with a good many of these situations that kids come up with. So I just want to say that there are natural alternatives to a good many of these problems, but people just don't want to take the time and really invest their own welfare and looking at those hard problems that they have inside.
Okay, fine. Well, thank you so very much for calling, Richard.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. And that was Richard calling us all the way from Vermont. And there really are alternative therapies for these children who are hyperactive. And some of them are really that they're type A personalities. And the type A personalities entirely different than I'm a sanguine. Hey, I'm not a type A personality. But, you know, a type A personalities are usually the sort of people who really get a lot accomplished. And
right.
We're going to treat them by drugging them?
Right, exactly.
All right, Kelly, well, we've got about 5 minutes more. What are some of the other things that you think are really important that you'd like to bring out for our listeners?
Well, I mean, you know, as far as the drugs are concerned, there's just other things that I'm working on.
Okay, tell us some of the other things you're working on.
Well, I just finished a story, actually, on our economy, another bubble that nobody has really paid much attention to, which is the pension benefit bubble. Right now, some of our largest, you know, S&P 500 companies are literally hundreds of billion dollars short in their pension plans.
Well, really, I have read in the New York, pardon me, in the Wall Street Journal that that GM was behind 12.2 or 3 billion dollars in their pension fund funding, and then of course in Barron's that the figure is closer to $30 billion. Do you know anything about that?
Yes, that's absolutely true. GM, Ford, SBC. I mean, all like as I say, of the 500 S&P companies, there are roughly 260 odd companies who are underfunded by, as I say, $300 billion.
$300 billion, and of course that means they can't make any profits until they paid those pension funds off.
In fact, what they estimated, I think it was the John Deere company, they are so far behind that for the next 5 years, all the profits that they would make would have to be poured back into their pension plan
before they could make any profit for their investors.
Right, for the shareholders. So they're going to be working for their employees rather than for their shareholders.
Well, how soon will this article be out? Because
it'll
I think
be out next week.
It would be actually published next week?
Yes.
Okay, fine. Well, I certainly need that for some work we're doing at the present time. And really, but what this is going to do is really put our major industries here into a very, very defensive position.
Exactly. And you know, again, I mean, the economy is in pretty bad shape to begin with. Corporations are not spending money. Any money they make now has to be poured back into their pension plans, which means if I wanted to invest, I certainly would invest in a company that I knew had to pour all of its profits back into the pension plan.
But what that means is they're not going to have any money for research. They're not going to have any money for buying new plants or for updating their productive capacity, which is going to put American industry into an increasingly defensive position.
Right. Exactly. And that's why it's so important, and that's why I'm concerned that it's not receiving the attention that it needs to get.
Well, you know, it's really very interesting. General Motors is, you know, opening a lot of plants over there in China. And, of course, in China, they don't have to abide by all of these stupid rules we have here, where the federal government requires them to fund these pension funds that will actually break these plants, these companies down the line, and especially the way this thing is going. General Motors, almost $30 billion, and they're not making that much on their cars at 0% down and 0% financing, and, you know, maybe you don't pay anything for 6 months or so. So what's going to happen? What's going to happen to our economy?
Well, I mean, I got to tell you, I'm surprised that Sir Alan, Mr. Greenspan, I think that him saying that the economy is soft is an understatement. Frankly, all the indicators show it's in some real trouble, and I think that these pensions are just another nail in the coffin.
Well, I think that we're going to find an awful lot of people who expect they're going to get a pension from their employer, maybe in for a sad awakening. But then, of course, the people who think they're going to get Social Security 20 years from now are, you know, in fact, it's been said there are more people who believe in UFOs who really believe that they're going to get anything with their Social Security 25 years from now.
Well, that's true. That may be true. But again, you know, the Social Security system is very similar to these pension plans. You know, everybody goes, oh, don't worry about the pensions. They have the money today. Okay? And if the market goes back up, everything will be fine. Well, if the market doesn't go back up, they're only going to get more and more in debt to their pension plans because they don't stand still. In other words, every year, you know, they have to put money into a pension plan because 30 years from now, they have 500,000 people who are going to expect a pension. The same thing is happening with our Social Security system. Yes, we have money today, but will we have enough money 30 years from now for the next retirees?
Well, I've looked into it. I'm very, very pessimistic. Well, let's go to Mark, who's calling us from Aptos. Hi, Mark. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. Yes, I have a question regarding taking Ritalin and similar psychotropic drugs and not being able to own a firearm ever if you do.
What do you ever think at all about that, Kelly?
Well, you know, that's interesting that you would say that. I know that on firearm applications, they ask you if you're taking these drugs. I don't know that if it bans you from having them, I know that they ask that question.
I see. Uh-huh.
I do know that.
I know that you cannot get into the military.
Oh, yes.
If you've been taking Ritalin.
Yeah, well, it seems to follow the social agenda of the liberals to separate the citizens from firearms or even to go into the military.
Okay, well, I don't know all the answers, but I do know that we are abusing. This is the ultimate in child abuse in my estimation. Hey, thanks very much for calling.
Thank you, Dr.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Well, of course, we're just about out of time here. What are your parting thoughts for our listeners today, Kelly, other than the fact you should subscribe to Insight Magazine?
Well, they absolutely should subscribe to Insight Magazine. With this drug issue, the point is that people need to be aware of two things. A, if their child is diagnosed with ADHD, ask the question, where's the science, before you say yes to drugging your kid. Where is the science to support this diagnosis? Okay, that's the first thing that they have to ask. And if they can't get that science, don't drug them.
And I agree with you totally. In fact, I think that we're too trusting. We have to really be responsible for our own health. If they want to vaccinate your child, study it. Be sure, absolutely certain, that you know as much as the doctor does. In fact, you may very well find you know a lot more than he does. You may find out he is not giving the vaccines to his own children, but he's required to give them to you.
That's right.
So anyway, we're out of time. God bless you. Thank you so very much for being with us. And it's always a pleasure having you.
Thank you.
Right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Well, that was Kelly O'Mara, who is with Insight Magazine, and we've had her on actually three of our programs. They've always been very pleasant. She's certainly a very lovely woman, and she's spent many years working in a congressman's office, and, well, someday maybe we'll get her to come on and tell the story about why she got fired. She got fired because she was trying to do a good job getting to the truth of what happened with TWA 800. And, of course, Christine Borgensen tells that story in my interviews with her. Christine Borgensen wrote the book entitled Into the Buzzsaw. And she worked for CBS as a prize-winning, Emmy-winning producer. And she was on the way up to being a producing star for CBS until she was assigned the job of getting to the truth about what happened with TWA 800. And when she tried to get the truth out, they put her into the buzzsaw. We carry that book. It's 18 essays by 18 writers, and we'll be having several of them on in the near future, who tried to get the truth out about various things that happened, the boys we left behind, the government's, the CIA's involvement in drug smuggling. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, our government is the biggest drug smuggler in the world. That's why, of course, one reason for invading Afghanistan was to get, of course, the Northern Alliance in power and get the drugs flowing back into Europe. You said, well, that couldn't be. Well, you really need to get our four tapes out on Is There Really a War on Drugs, or the writings of Gary Webb. We'll be having Gary Webb on here. He was a reporter for the San Jose Mercury, who brought out the studies that he had done showing the CIA involvement in drugs. What did it get him? Well, it got him fired. Now he's working with the state legislature here in California. We got real problems. Pray for America. Pray for our leaders. Pray for revival. And certainly please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you. Oh!
Mm-hmm.